Good evening and welcome to yet another episode. I'm chewing my cud here.
Oh man.
Of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013. And we are past our sell by date. at the farmer's market, because I am Farmer Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is my steed.
Well, I was going to say Billy Green Jeans, but I guess not. I'm here. I don't even, whatever, man. Ride me like a pony, Billy Crash, whatever the hell. I don't care.
We'll take you to the fair later on, Bill.
Yay! Slap,
and we'll pin a ribbon on you.
Ooh, baby, I like it. I hope it pierces my skin.
Can we eat first, though? Okay.
Sure.
Tonight, we are talking about barnyard horror. Hard down on the farm. We're getting in touch with our inner Pennsylvania Dutch, I suppose you could say.
Oh, man.
Because, you know, the farm is, whether it's incidental or intentional, as a setting, I feel like there's a fair number of horror movies that utilize the farm. And to what end? There are some really popular titles out there that I'm sure we'll make mention of.
Not necessarily good ones, but
yeah, definitely. Bill, do you have any experience with, like, have you ever been to a farm? Did you have any family that because I know you're from New Jersey, so I don't think they're really known for their agrarian landscape there, but I could
but
be wrong.
We were at one time. New Jersey was the corn growing capital of the colonies, you know, and way back, obviously. We're number one for blueberries. Usually when you have a blueberry, it's from New Jersey. Not all cranberries come from Massachusetts. There's from a lot of New Jersey cranberry bogs. Mm-hmm. And eggplant. I think eggplants are grown in New Jersey and Israel. Like, it's like, wow. But New Jersey, Garden State, so we're growing a lot of stuff. I think the interesting thing is I would buy stuff from, I'd go to farmers in Pennsylvania and buy, meat and such, ranchers and whatnot, and get eggs. And it's interesting, the farmer has that burden of a 24/7 working lifestyle. And, in the Northeast, you're like, well, in the winter they get a break, but, they still have to make sure that the fields are ready for when things start to thaw, they have the right nutrients and minerals. Is the equipment working, and they might do something else too, because, times are difficult. Maybe they do hothouse stuff. I mean, who knows? But, the only good thing I know offhand about, like, horror movies with farms, they're not like farm exploitation films, if I might say. Like, the anytime there's like a dramatic farm, film, it's like, we might lose the farm to the bank, or, the government did this, or a commercial farmer's trying to buy us up and drive us off our land, and it, like, goes on and freaking on, Horror movie's a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely. And my grandfather on my dad's side was actually a farmer.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so part of my childhood was it was either a weekly or bi-weekly visit out to the farm in Lebanon County, close to Anvil.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by that time that I became cognizant of that, he was retired from farming, but I think he had people who actually still worked the farm, or maybe it was
sharecroppers.
maybe oh, it was wow. But it was like in a reduced capacity, I think, that the farm was being used at that point. But he had a lot of acreage.
Mm-hmm.
And they had cows and, I believe, pigs and stuff like that.
Whee!
Yeah, squeal out of Billy Boy. but, yeah, it was interesting to just go there because it seems so vast,
mm-hmm.
A space. It's like, wow, how can one, two people, him and my grandmother, have all of this land, all of this space, a huge sort of not garage, but kind of like a warehouse set up for all the farm equipment.
Yeah, so, I can imagine, man.
And I remember going up in, like, which was probably probably certainly a bit risky, but going up like in the haylofts and stuff like that in the barn and just climbing the hay bales that were stored up there.
You went for rolling the hay, Johnny?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was really exciting. Yeah, I lost my virginity to a hay bale, Bill, so there you go.
You sick bastard. My luck, I'd go, oh, and I'd like find that needle in the haystack when you don't want to.
Yeah, so it was interesting, just like, because, you know, when you're a little kid, you get bored by the grown-up conversation, and luckily I was able to kind of wander around the vast farmhouse. The farmhouse was also really big, and they had a waterbed up on the second floor, so I was like periodically just jump and roll around on the waterbed. But wow. Yeah, it was just interesting to walk around, because, you know, when you're little, everything seems so big, and it was just kind of an interesting place to explore, you know, and have the freedom to explore. So kind of when I see like a farm utilized as a location or as a pivotal plot point of a horror movie, it does kind of bring back those memories, you know, albeit without the zombies and the cannibals and what have you. But you know, maybe that's something that caused me to fantasize when I was younger about, like, yeah, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, George Romero's zombies tried to break into the farmhouse in Lebanon County when I was there with my family, mm-hmm. and we had to fight off the zombie horde. So, you know, stuff like that. So
that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Now every time I think of farms, it's like farm equals bad smells.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that's like, you know, it's just, I can't do it. I'm not into it. I just don't want to.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah, but it's funny. So you're actually bringing up Night of the Living Dead, which...
either version.
Yeah. Either version, yeah.
Oh,
did I say that out loud?
Ayo.
Oh, God. No, and that was interesting, and I think part of the reason, I'm not sure why he wanted that, but it was like, you know, really isolated house. It's like, well, let's pick a farm. You know, it's like, it made perfect sense to me.
Yeah, exactly. And he does such a good job of establishing that isolation, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, kind of, even though the original movie isn't from 1968, you still feel like there's this, you're taking a couple steps back in terms of technology and, civilization, yeah. You know, you're just getting further away from kind of like where you think safety will be, like in the big city or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Evans City per se. Yeah.
And the cool thing is, you know, besides, you know, the vast area, it's like, even in some long shots, you know, like the light of the house just totally fades into pure darkness. There's like nothing else. And it's just, adds to the whole atmosphere, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I kind of like that element of, you know, it's like these, I get the impression that they're suburbanites, maybe except for Ben, played by Dwayne Jones, or Tony Todd.
Right, right.
You know, it seems like they're all like, oh, they just took a trip out to the country, you know, and just happened to wander into the zombie apocalypse and had to self-preserve in a hurry. So it's like, oh, great, we're stuck in a farmhouse. Mm-hmm. And I love how Romero, you know, it's almost the equivalent of the cell phone thing today, but in the 68 film, he just has the zombie knock the phone line down.
Yeah.
Like, right at the beginning, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, oh, shit, okay, well, you're definitely not calling anybody now. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And Romero also uses the elements of the farm in the farm county with the crazies.
Oh, good call. I forgot about that.
You know, I that's my favorite Romero film. And I think part of it is because it's like they're in this vast area. The military has to, like, you know, quarantine the whole area. So it's difficult from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The locals know where to go and how to possibly get out. But, you know, it's like, oh, everything looks clear. And then you're running through and then you meet somebody. And it's like, are they crazy or not? And I thought it was great because it just, that whole environment just lent itself to like possible surprises at any turn.
Yeah, definitely. It was a very, that movie is interesting because unlike the remake, which is still a good movie, I think.
Agreed, agreed.
In Romero's film, the virus or whatever, the quote unquote crazy of the title, that can take any number of forms depending on the person. So it's like Lynn Lowry has a specific reaction to it that's very unlike anybody, one person or another person. So
Loved her in that so much, man. She just killed it.
yeah, I really need to watch that again. It's probably been 15 years since I watched that movie.
Yeah, one of my favorite death scenes.
Lynn Lowry's. Oh
I love it. I love it.
I do remember that. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. Like, as I was coming up with titles, it was like, well, what purpose does the farm serve? Is it an operating farm? Oftentimes, like in those Romero movies, it's not operational, or the people who operated it have blown their brains out or something, something tragic.
Yeah, but I think most often, like the farm is used as sort of like a spaceship. It might as well be, like there's no one around for miles, and it's like, oh, you're all alone, and hey, we could have some great gore with some, somebody falling into a combine or something, because we even see it in what was the movie I just had in my head? Even Pumpkinhead, Pumpkinhead is which I love, Stan Winston film.
It's a good movie, yeah.
Yeah, with Lance Henriksen and all. It's this there's like there's the farm, you could feel the farm elements a little bit in it, and it just added to the whole notion of isolated people, isolated area, back in the holla, and doing their thing, ultra small community, and very rustic, ultra bucolic, and it's like, they're on their own. They might as well be on their own planet,
Yeah, and I think, to that end, Bill, that's a really good point you bring up, and it brings up another film that I was thinking about as far as isolation is concerned, and that kind of permeates. Well, it's not that one,
Oh, okay.
but I'll let you talk about that one because I
All
know
right.
you like that one. But I was thinking, Cujo, where Dee Wallace is trapped in the car at the farm with the rabid Saint Bernard, stalking around. It's like it's in the middle of July. It's hot and they don't have water. It's just this very dire situation, and there's like nobody on the farm who can help them because the one guy who could help them has been bitten by the dog and killed. So I really again, it's like with Romero, that element of desperation, kind of, what would you do if you were in this situation?
Yeah, exactly. Man, and I think that's one of the reasons I love Isolation, the Irish horror film,
Yes.
starring the Babadook's Essie Davis.
Yeah.
Again, a small cast, weirdness going on. It's at night. It's creepy. It's creepy because there's cows. Cows can be creepy at night. And but it. It, and Isolation is on my list of best horror films ever made, and it just resonates with this guy, this poor guy, trying to run this place on his own, and it's like you can't do it, and it's like, and shit happens that isn't good, and it's really just interesting because it's so harrowing. And of course, when things take place at night on this farm, it's really bad because of what they have to look for. And I just, again, the atmosphere that this farm at the end of the road in the middle of nowhere, created, it was just really awesome.
Yeah, Bill, I'm with you. You loaned me a copy of your copy of that, and I watched it, and I was similarly taken with it. I'd like to see it again because I feel like I've forgotten a lot of it. But it goes to what you say about how Irish horror is, almost really pretty consistently good with each movie they put out.
Right, damn straight.
And I'm like, yeah, every time I'm starting to do what you do, and I'm like, yeah, Oh, it's an Irish film? Oh, that's a almost like an unofficial quality seal for a horror movie.
Yeah, I think I've seen 15 or 20 Irish, films from the Irish Film Board, and only two are like really, really awful, and the rest are just like have like 3 stars or more merit, because of great storytelling and, digging within their own culture to like present, hey, this is horror from Ireland. It's not just a horror movie. This is from what makes us Irish, and that's just really compelling.
Yeah, and that sense of cultural identity definitely. Yeah, and sort of in the same way that Romero kind of embodies that Western Pennsylvania kind of sort of personifies that or captures that in a way, because it's not what you would get from a Hollywood. Neither Isolation nor those Romero films are what you would get from Hollywood at either of those respective filmmaking points. So
Oh yeah.
I kind of like that a lot because it does maintain that sense of identity, sure.
Oh yeah, and that's why I also love, and this movie is a howl, and it's fantastic, and it's from New Zealand. I think you know what I'm going to be talking about.
Do tell.
The comedy horror Black Sheep from 2006.
I was thinking about it, yeah.
Oh man, and it's great because it's like Kiwi horror, and it's a blast. It's a lot of fun. It's gory as hell. It's like
Yeah, it is.
it's over the top, insane. And what are, I have to figure out how much money they had for this damn movie, because I was like, yeah, it was independent, seemed small budget, but
Yeah.
they put a lot into it, man, because they made some really great gory stuff happen and all. And it's just wonderful what they did in taking, like, New Zealand, it's almost like common knowledge that there's more sheep in New Zealand than people. And so to create a horror movie about what makes New Zealand work, what's the backbone of their economy, as like sheep that are like, they're engineered to become bloodthirsty killers. It's like, it's great. It's almost, talk about like poking fun at yourself, and that's what Jonathan King, the writer director, does. And it's a blast. It's a 90-minute great fun ride.
Yeah, definitely if you're a fan of Peter Jackson or or even something like Frankenstein's Army, I would definitely suggest checking out Black Sheep. There was a time in the mid 2000s where that Dimension Extreme label was really putting out some good stuff, better than what Dimension proper was putting in theaters at the time. They were doing a better job of releasing stuff like Black Sheep, Inside, and Martyrs. That stuff was going straight to video, but I was like, that's cool because could pick it up at Best Buy at the time. So yeah,
Yeah, I hear you.
but yeah, Black Sheep is definitely it, it's if I recall correctly, Bill, because I probably haven't seen it since like around the time it came out on video, is there's some creepy stuff in that movie too, right? It seemed like there was funny, like over the top stuff, but there was also some stuff that was a bit actually it was like, okay, it's a little more serious, or am I making that up?
No.
Okay.
There's some stuff there to where I was like, holy crap, it's like, and that was a good kind of holy crap. So yeah, no, definitely. Oh
Yeah,
man.
and there are some movies that I'm like I don't understand the following for them, but I'm like, hey, more power to you if you're a fan. I'm not judging, but I'm like Children of the Corn. Okay.
I
It's
knew.
like what do you think of that movie? Do you think that movie brings anything to the American
No,
heartland?
I'm not into the entire franchise or anything like that. It's just, and even the first movie, I was like, whatever. It was interesting in the fact that, these kids come out of this cornfield, and man, Peter Horton and
Linda
Linda
Hamilton.
Hamilton from 84, and they wreak havoc on the town, so it was almost like this, it was that was the coolest thing that I liked about it, was you normally have like cities invading farms and farms becoming turned into condos, and it's like no farm, no food.
Yeah.
But these kids come out of the farm into like the suburban area, and they're like, well, we're going to own you. You know, it was like, damn, you know, they go and attack the townspeople. And
right.
So I thought that was cool in that regard, but that was it. That was absolutely it.
And I think that's the thing with the, you know, it's an adaptation of a short story by Stephen King, which I don't remember how long it is, but I've read it. And it's definitely a case where, you know how sometimes people say, oh, yeah, you should make a feature out of a short story because then you can explore it, you know,
right.
better than if you tried to condense a novel into a feature length film. And now we don't have that problem because we have TV being what it is. People can do more long form adaptations of things, but it was just like, yeah, as a feature, it was just like, okay, it sort of blew its load at that very beginning point and then kind of never recovered. And
oh yeah, I was like, whatever.
I felt like it kind of floundered for the rest of its runtime. There was a lot of talk and, you know, just yeah. And I just was like, it's a, you know, it's interesting from a setting perspective. You know, it's like just miles of cornfields, and there is something ominous about that. But the whole premise is a bit hokey, I think. And
almost like what they tried to do with The Tall Grass, the recent Stephen King short story become movie, which is crap. It's absolute shit. It is awful. It's such a dragged out storyline that, you know, it's so stupid, man. If you don't hit the fast forward button, you're going to end up passing out.
That's a shame, because I think Vincenzo Natali did that one.
Yeah, it was a shame. But one of the things, at least in our country, it's actually funny. I don't know. I think other countries do it. I'm sure they do if they have crows. But you have scarecrows in the... And there's been so many movies, you know, centered on that, from Jeepers Creepers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I think a lot of people really seem to enjoy Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, the 1981 TV movie.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that one where...
I actually haven't. I've heard so much about it, but I haven't seen it.
All right. Well, obviously, I don't want to give it away and all, but, like, the Scarecrow itself, you know, is this, you know... they even include it in the recent Scary Stories You Could Tell in the Dark. You know, you have this scarecrow in a field, and it's like, you know, you want to make it... you don't even have to make it scary. It just needs to look like a guy to scare away crows. You know, that's what it does.
Right.
But for some reason, people are compelled to, like, have these creepy-ass scarecrows in their, you know, at least in the movies anyway, to scare people as well. You know, it's like, you know, kids going, oh, it's a scary, it creeps me out, you know. And of course, sooner or later, you know, its head's gonna move, you know, and it's like, hoo-hoo. But it's become its own cliche, its own trope, you know, with a lot of these movies.
That's true, yeah.
So at least those three. I'm sure there's like a ton of other scarecrow movies, but it's
Bill, I was going to mention, have you seen the movie Scarecrows from 1988, I believe?
Scarecrows, I think I have. Let me double check my master list of geekism. Not Scarecrow, but Scarecrows, 88. Yes, Ted Vernon.
William Wesley directed.
Yeah, I have not. Not at this time, Johnny.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, not yet. At least, maybe I did, but I don't have it on my list.
Okay. Well, it's as far as scarecrow movies are concerned, that one's a bit interesting because it takes sort of the sprawling cornfields and farm fields and an abandoned farmhouse, but it sets up a disparate concept because it's like these war criminals or military deserters. They rob a bank, hijack a plane, and they wind up in this field, in this farmhouse. And there's all these scarecrows around.
I hate when that happens.
But it's actually really effective, kind of, surprisingly so. There's some dialogues kind of, but it's kind of interesting how it all unfolds, and it is kind of creepy. In some ways, it's creepy in kind of the Romero sense with the farmhouse, but it's like, oh, we're left to rely on ourselves, and there's this other outside that we're not quite sure is really a thing, and we're left to try and work together, but there's all this tension and friction and hostility because it's money and we don't trust each other, if one person dies, we'll step over them to take what they have so we can claim it for ourselves, kind of thing. So, yep. Kind of a greed parable, if you will, but
I was just gonna say the lovely Victoria Christian's in it too.
Okay. what's she been in, Bill? I don't know the name.
Not much, man. She hasn't acted since 2004, man.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so yeah, scarecrows are kind of their own little almost their own little offshoot of the barnyard horror, which is already its own subgenre. And I know, Texas Chainsaw, I'm just going to say it because I want to end with a movie that I feel like a lot of people haven't really heard of. So, I mean, Texas Chainsaw is kind of like the big farm movie. I think that everybody's seen, it's the cannibal family on the farm. And again, it's like the farmhouse is out in the middle of nowhere because our heroine has to run what seems like a half marathon to get away from Leatherface and get back to civilization through the thickets and all that stuff. But what do you think, Bill? I mean, like Children of the Corn, I would say Texas Chainsaw is even more iconic in terms of its use of farm or farmland as a backdrop or a setting.
Yeah, it is. The only regret I have is that I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre way, way, way too late. I saw it after I saw so many horror movies that by the time I got around to it, even though I was trying to keep it in perspective in my head, I was like, yeah, whatever, it wasn't like I crapped on a movie and I still gave it 3 stars, but I don't, have a reverence for it like, other horror fans do. I just blame that on seeing it too late. But again, you had that great thing, where these kids, it's like, oh my gosh, what did we get ourselves into? How do we get out of here? We're in the middle of nowhere, man, because it's like, they're on this farm and they're just stuck and they're off the main road. And it's like, the people who live there, they know their land. We don't, and it's like,
Well, and this was also 1974. This was also a time when I feel like, maybe I'm wrong with this, but I feel like a lot of those, hey, don't wander over to that house, and don't invite yourself in kind of tropes came into play. Like, it's like, nah, it's not really a good idea. You shouldn't do that. I'm going to yell at the screen because that's stupid kind of thing, which is more commonplace these days because we're so indoctrinated to the cliches themselves because there've been so many movies and so much written about them and so much comment on them. But I think that was interesting because the two kids who approach the farmhouse at the very beginning of Texas Chainsaw, they're like, they have no reason to suspect anything bad's going to happen. It's broad daylight for Pete's sake. So it's like, oh, of course, hey, okay, there's a generator going or something like that. They got some gasoline and, just their most stressful quandary is like figuring out a way to trade something with the people, because it's a foregone conclusion that just normal people are living on this farm, and it's just that their Christian duty or their Amish duty to help us out, kind of,
right.
So I think that's kind of an interesting thing with Texas Chainsaw. I don't know if you had that a reaction, Bill. It's like, oh, why are you doing that? It's like, don't do that. While you were watching it, because you watched it so late, but
No. I know. It's just that, I hate, like, if I watch a horror movie and it has to do with a farm, I want that family to be stable. I don't want, I want them to be educated. I don't want,
That would be surprising. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want the dumb country bumpkin crap, which is like, it's like, again, it's like, what are you doing?
Right.
Just because somebody works on a farm. I mean, I've taught a lot of kids who came off of a farm, you know, and they have a thirst for knowledge like anybody else. They can write, they could read, they're intelligent. They like to question the world, you know, and it's like, you know, and I grew up on a farm, and it's like, and it's great because it's against the stereotype. Like, oh, they're on a farm. They grew up on a farm. Yeah, they're not really with it, you know, because they have no idea how the world works. And it's like, really? You know, so.
So do you think that kind of, just to generalize, do you think that thirst for knowledge kind of comes from, you know, just being kind of in that setback, isolated setting, Bill?
I missed that first part of your question, actually. And that wasn't you speak.
No. It's okay. Do you think that a thirst for knowledge comes from kind of being in that isolated bubble, kind of?
Well, that's it. I don't think it's an isolated bubble.
Okay.
You know, if you're in a vast, vast, vast ranch, and like, God, when I was driving through Montana, I saw ranches that went on for like, I don't know, 1,000,000 miles, you know, and it's like, holy shit, you know? And yeah, that's isolated, but it still doesn't mean, you know, that these families just stay in their home and like they're all like, you know, it's some incestuous lunacy.
Yeah.
And now, especially with the internet and all, it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, you could be connected to anybody on the planet, you know, and so I don't think that, you know, it's for a lot of people. Yeah, it is their job, but, you know, I run a farm. That's your job, you know, and that's like, and that's a lot. But it's also you have to live there because your job never ends. And, you know, my one wife, you know, she grew up on a farm, you know, and, you know, we'd have to get up early before school and do our chores, and that meant feeding animals and doing this and that, collecting eggs and everything else. And,
right.
You know, and she has her master's degree. She's, you know, she's a counselor and like, you know, in psychology and all this stuff, you know, it doesn't mean if you're on a farm that you're, you know, you're a couple of IQ points short, you know, or any crap like that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just to bring my own two cents to it, I mean, because my dad grew up on a farm, I don't believe he was a fan of doing work on the farm, but he did it. but, you know, he went to Juniata College, and then he went to a seminary and was ordained. So, you know, it's going to what you said, Bill. It's like, it's not the stupid, incestuous, bumpkin, psycho Rob Zombie character, you know, sort of thing, you know. It's not House of a Thousand Corpses when you walk onto someone's farm, basically. Yeah, exactly.
And so that's like the thing that I hate seeing, like, oh, this again. I always like to see those stories that it's like, oh, this is different, you know. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I don't know if you heard, because even like The Conjuring, that took part on a farm, and again, that was to like, you know, keep things isolated and creepy. And I know a lot of people love The Conjuring and the whole Conjuring universe, but to me, it is pure and adulterated commercial horror shit. boring, dull, bad storytelling, blah blah blah. They have their moments, but right. Man, not enough. And you know, no matter what, any of those movies, those kids are safe, and that pisses me off. Do you ever see I Drink Your Blood?
No, I haven't, but that title stuck with me for many years, but I've never seen the movie.
Yeah, I saw the movie, and I gave it 3 stars.
Wow.
And, yeah, I know, from 1970.
Is Lynn Lowry in that one, too?
Yes, she is. She's uncredited. She played Carrie. She's near Riley Mills. Bhaskar Roy Chowdhury is in it as well, and I remember parts of it, but not all of it. But oh man, yeah, it's a group of hippies wreak havoc on a small town and a young boy whose grandfather and sister were attacked by them, and he decides to get even with deadly results. Dun 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 dun. And I know it takes place on a farm at one point because, you know, if I was, of course, they're satanic hippies, which is the antithesis of hippieism. And, of course, they're making Satanists look bad, you know, which we call it. They have some weird stuff going on in there. But What the hell was I gonna say? Crap, I forgot my own friggin' thought. No, I love when it's like, you know, you could use the farm to your advantage because it's your home and stuff like that. And the one thing I don't get is like, you know, if you're isolated on a farm, like isolation, they do it well and it's perfect. You know,
Yes.
where he's coming home, he's like, you know, there's people camping on his land and he's like, hey, you gotta go, you know. Because like otherwise you're gonna know when people are around because you're it. You know, it's like
Yeah. Yeah.
there's nobody around for a million miles. But like if you could use your, you know, your farmhouse, your home, and your field to your advantage, that's great. But
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about Isolation, Bill, like the movie, is just that it plays things much straighter.
oh
It's
yeah.
not at all a campy movie. It is,
No.
and I think, yeah, you kind of find that with a lot of, except Grabbers maybe, but it's like those Irish films take themselves, have an element of seriousness to them that kind of is refreshing because. Oftentimes American horror movies will try to diffuse stuff with a joke and, it kind of takes away from the tension, but
Yeah, exactly. In fact, you and I should do a show on Irish horror, man.
yeah, I need to see Grabbers because I've been
Oh
we
my
can
God, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, let's do that next, Bill. That'll force me to watch Grabbers.
Get on that shit.
I will, man.
Oh my God, Grabbers. I was like, this. Oh, the premise is just perfect. It's perfect. It's so. I love when people are like, oh, you think we do X? Well, we're going to use this to our advantage. It's just fan friggin' tastic. And serious, you know, Irish horror movies are just, you know, really, really solid. But Grabbers is a blast, man. I just wait, just wait, just
Because
wait.
I believe I know enough about it that what you were saying about how Irish horror like takes elements of the culture
Oh yeah.
and incorporates them into their movies, I think I know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, and they do it so damn well and make it so much. It's a blast. It's a blast. But
Excellent.
nah, I'm wondering, like, you know, if you were to do a horror movie taking place on a farm, what would you do to make it distinct at this point?
Yeah, Bill, there are a couple that, and I won't talk at length about them, but there are a few that I had where it's like the farm is used for used to study a single character.
Right.
It's like and you can go back to 1974's Deranged with
Oh my gosh, the Ed Gein ripoff, yeah.
yeah, and I think that's a really good movie,
No,
actually.
yeah. I used to wear the t-shirt in college all the time.
Yeah, because it's just very and it took that faux documentary approach kind of before it was really popular to do so.
You know, you are so right, man. You are so right.
Yeah, and that's just essentially that movie's a study about this, Ed Gein surrogate who's just kind of like he's a little weird socially, but the people in town are like, oh, that's just Ezra, kind of, that's just how he is. But they don't know that there's really horrible stuff going on. But you get, it's one of those movies where you get inside the head of the madman, kind of, and you kind of understand. You don't agree with him, but you understand why he is the way he is.
Yeah, and that starred Roberts Blossom, who we lost in 2011. And yeah, he brought the creep factor to that role. And
Yeah.
yeah, that was something else. It was one of those movies where I actually had the t-shirt like about 5 years before I saw the actual movie. I was like,
Poser.
yeah, well, I was like, wow, Sally Mae died a horrible death, but the worst hasn't happened to her yet. And it shows, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'll take that shirt. You know, I was, you
Well,
know.
it's like the pair of legs upside down,
Yep.
and
Yep.
Robert's Blossom is in the lower left-hand corner. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was great.
Yeah, and there's that notion of, well, he's a farmer and he's treating people like cattle,
Oh,
and
yeah. Oh,
sort of. Yeah, and
no
he's
more.
sort of like a little bit like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's like,
Exactly.
well, for as shocking as those movies, were and, still are to people who haven't seen them, it's just like, well, there's something to like Toby Hooper like embracing kind of the madness of this family, even though, like you said, Bill, it's become a cliche in horror with, like, you know, it's like, oh, the histrionic performances, they're crazy, they're cannibals, and it's much more obnoxious these days than it was back then, so because it wasn't so oversaturated. But there's a movie called that I don't think I've ever talked about on this show called Pigs from 1973.
With Tony Lawrence, right?
Yes, daughter of Mark Lawrence, who was kind of a character actor back during that time. He's one of the guys who beats up Dustin Hoffman in the park in Marathon Man.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah, but he actually directed and stars in this weird, weird low-budget movie that was a year before Texas Chainsaw, but it covers a lot of the same ground, and it's an interesting movie. It's not great, but it's basically, you know, run-down hotel, run-down restaurant, and the guy has a bunch of pigs out back, and he feeds wayward drifters to the pigs, so...
Like Deadwood.
the pigs have acquired a taste for human flesh, so that's kind of where the horror element comes in. But the main character, Tony Lawrence, is also like this, presented as this disturbed asylum escapee and everything. Oh, so again, it's kind of like there's that visceral horror element with the actual carnage, but then you have the psychological element as well, which makes it kind of interesting, I think.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And what do you think, Bill, about The Eyes of My Mother? Because I almost forgot about that when I was like, yeah, that takes place on a farm.
Damn straight it does, man. That movie is... I have a feeling if I watch that again, I might up it. But I gave that 4 stars. That's...
Same here, yeah.
Yeah, man. Just... Nicholas Pesci just friggin', he wrote, directed, he destroyed it. He just fantastic acting, atmosphere, isolated farm, bad things happen. And it's funny because, you know, he goes deeper than a lot of films where it's like they present, oh my gosh, this family's crazy. But he goes into it on a deeper psychological, more psychological level. And,
yes.
You know, focusing on Francisca. And it's really a disturbing black and white feature that's quite compelling on every level.
Yeah. And I do think it kind of shares some DNA with something like Deranged, for example, because it really is about this character. And if anything, Pesce is very, he's much more ambiguous with the character, though. You don't have, like, in Deranged, you have the narrator coming out and explaining periodically.
Right.
You know, what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this, it's more like it's very much an internalized performance from Kika Magales. And it's just very effective. It's very disturbing. But again, it's like that thing where, like, we... come to understand Ezra in Deranged, we also come to understand Francisca as well, right. As much as we might not want to, and maybe that's where kind of the weird humanity of those films comes in, because she's left alone on the farm, and she figures out ways to repurpose certain things.
Yeah.
On the farm to benefit what she thinks is best for her, maybe, or the other person as well. So.
Yeah. Clara Wong is in it too, man. That's just...
I think that's the girl she picks up.
Yep.
That one time, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nah, it's just, that movie's fan-friggin-tastic. That was a great surprise. And so was his second feature, and which was great because... I don't see a lot of directors being consistent on a positive aspect these days.
Yeah.
And his sophomoric effort was just as phenomenal as his initial one. So
Yeah, I think we'll both be talking about piercing on our best of show, but
I think so, Johnny. I am not afraid.
I won't. Yeah. That's why I'm like, can we eat first? Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Bill, I've got one more, and to me it's the biggie on
Whoa,
the farm.
Do it.
Yeah, I didn't know if you had any more you wanted to bring up at all.
I mentioned everything I wanted to in a way I wanted to, Johnny, so.
Oh, that makes me so happy, Bill.
I know it, yeah. Whatever, bring it, farm boy.
I'm going to pop open a Dr. Pepper and just sit on the stoop and, you know, admire the fruits of my labor today.
Oh, my God.
I got to ask, Bill. I watched this recently, and this is honestly what inspired the idea for this show, because it shook me, this movie.
Whoa.
And it's by our good buddy. Well, he doesn't know we're his good buddy, but trust me, we're your good buddy if you're listening to this show. Larry Fessenden.
I love Larry Fessenden.
Yes. I actually...
picks.
Well, yeah, and which has released so many great movies from so many great filmmakers over the years. Mm-hmm. It's really...
He's nurtured many a career, man.
You know, Glass Eye Picks should have the success that Blumhouse does, so, but I digress.
Yeah, why does Blumhouse have a... Anyway, go ahead, man. I don't want to get in that argument.
Lowest common denominator.
Okay.
As Dave Kay would say, it's LCD, man.
That's how he would say it.
Give me a break. This movie is crap. Waka waka waka.
A fiend on film is gonna kick your ass. I love oh my god, you just killed me, man.
He's too busy putting together his little noir booklet for November, but anyway.
You cramped my abs, man. That's what you just did.
Hey, that's what I aim for. But anyway, Bill, have you seen the movie he did from 1991? Called No Telling.
Wait a minute.
If Wait not, I gotta loan it to you if you haven't seen it.
Wait a minute, because I don't remember it. No, Good. I didn't see this. Did you see Habit?
Yeah, I finally saw that like a month ago for the first time.
Shit. Okay, No Telling. All right, cool.
Well, it's actually, I'll give a shout out here. The Scream Factory put out this nice little set of four Larry Fessenden films. And it's still in print. You can find it on Amazon or off of Shout Factory's website. And No Telling is one of the films on this. And it, again, like I said, it's from 91, so it's an earlier movie from Mr. Fessenden. But I started it thinking it was going to be one thing, and then it turned into a bunch of different things. Mm. It's a bit of a Frankenstein's monster, and even I think there is a blatant reference to Frankenstein within the film, even though there's a lot of visual cues and stuff that align it with the Frankenstein story. But it's this very, I feel like it's a very human tale, but it also embraces the outlandish in a frightening way, I think. It doesn't go over the top.
Okay.
It's not, to me, it wasn't funny when it went to its extremes, which some movies can't do that. Some movies are like, they go too far in a certain direction, and it's like, oh shit, they just went way too far, and now it totally wrecked the tone of the movie. Not with this one.
That's good.
And I mean, this a brief synopsis is just that it's a husband and wife. They go to this farm. The husband is involved with like this scientific research company. And he establishes a lab on the farm in one of the buildings. And he starts to do some stuff that is, needless to say, very questionable.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife is kind of suffering. Not suffering, but, you know, she wants to get pregnant. She wants more human connection from her husband. Like, so, and it's like there's this conflagration of... you know, emotional need and horror that stems from that, and then the horror that stems from kind of the, you know, what could we do if we played God kind of notions.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing to the earth and the environment by sort of tampering in God's domain, you know?
Gotcha.
These kind of Mary Shelley questions that that have sort of plagued us, you know, since the beginning of time, you know. Just
Gotcha.
because we can, should we really? And the film really takes advantage of the farm setting. It makes it really, I there were moments in this film that really shook me because they seemed very real to me. Without saying too much, I'll loan it to you, Bill, because you got to see this thing. I got to hear what you think of
Oh, I can't wait, man. I
this
can't
movie.
wait.
But to me, it's kind of like the ultimate horror movie on the farm because it takes so much advantage of the setting of the
Farm
farm. But
elements, yeah.
yeah, exactly. But then there's also thematic elements of, like, you know, the local farmer who's struggling against the corporation who wants to take over his farm and stuff like that. So there's these certain rural politics, you know, rural versus global and national corporations and stuff like that, that kind of comes into play too. Fessenden really mixes it up, all that stuff up really well. And there's even times where he'll have characters engaging in this intellectual conversation about, you know, what is man's responsibility to nature and stuff like that. But it's not didactic, so I kind of like that.
Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah,
Man, I want to see it like I don't know, right now.
it really unsettled me, and I in a good way. I mean, that's what horror should do. So
Ooh, man, now I really have to see it.
yeah. So if you haven't seen No Telling, yeah, go see it and let me know what you think. And if you have seen it, let me know what you think too. Yeah. How does it fall within the pantheon of farm-based horror? That would be interesting. Yeah.
Well, I like that a lot, man. Oh man, what's going on here?
Yeah.
No, I just had some weirdness go on with my computer. Not, you know, just
Yay.
everything's good. Everything's good.
Yay,
Just a little weird. Just a little
Dr.
weird.
Weird. Tonight, we do the Farm Podcast.
Oh my gosh. On that note, I'm gonna do scream outs, man.
Before I do the Aqua Teen Hunger Force theme song. But yeah.
Oh man, we're doing scream outs to wonderful souls on Twitter who we follow, and they follow us, and we love them, and hopefully they love us.
Yay.
Yay, woohoo! So I'm gonna give you their Twitter handle, tell you a little bit about them, and all that fun stuff. And so scream outs this week go to Punk and Stuff. And they share images and facts from the glorious era of the 1970s and 80s.
Nice.
50% punk, 30% stuff, 20% total bollocks. And so they're awesome. Check them out, man. It's great. And this woman, I want to take a look at what's going on with her now. She's getting ready with Chainsaw Sally to do, yeah, to do their season three of the Chainsaw Sally show. Oh my gosh, I can't even speak because I couldn't read what I was looking at. And that is Debbie Rochon. Look for the book From the Underbelly to the Underground, and that's coming out in 2021. So she's got all of this cool stuff going on. Debbie is amazing. Check her out on the wonderful IMDb as well, and see what she's up to. And definitely check out Whatever Happened to Chainsaw Sally, the show.
You know, Bill, that's good you bring that up because my best friend was wondering what happened to that show too. I'll have to tell him.
It's coming back.
Yay.
It's coming back in, I think it's on Kickstarter. You can contribute to it if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, Indiegogo. I apologize. The great people at Indiegogo, and thanks to Jimmy O. Burrell for letting me know about what was going on here. So let me put that in my special things to remember. I might, whatever the hell that means. Yeah, so definitely she's coming. And this is one hell of a incredible professional photographer. I know a lot of people like, hey man, look what my cell phone could do. Yay. But there is an absolute art to composition, design, color, and Sean
Yes.
Maxwell has it. He's internationally renowned for his work, and he's a great videographer, and he's also an actor in Deadland movie.
Nice.
Check out his work, Sean Maxwell, phenomenal. And that's Sean, Sean. By horror, who's that? that's movie horror for web friends. And you could tag By Horror, go to their website, byhorror.com. You will never be disappointed. Always awesome. Mr. Josh, 1979. Who's Mr. Josh? He's a father, husband, and a writer for Nightmare on Film Street. And also part of the NOFS podcast. He's horror-bound, lover of the odd, the weird, and the spooky. He is funny as hell, very witty. Love the man, and he's out of Portland. Johnny Vaines.
Yeah.
Johnny Vaines, who is he? He's a writer, artist, and indie publisher of horror comics, Rockabilly Demon, Rockabilly Lucador. He's out of Texas, and you can follow what he's up to. And all his check out all his comics on johnnyvaines.com. Leanne Moonraven.
Yeah.
Yes, sociologist, social scientist, and PhD researcher, award-winning author, writer, actor, director, presenter for film and radio. She's out of Birmingham, UK. You could follow her on leannemoonraven.com, see what she's up to, which includes her latest short film, Wilted, which looks amazing. It was absolutely compelling, and I'm happy to say I am now a part of it in a very, very small way. Watch for that. It's going to be have a lot of impact. It's not horror, but it's real life horror, and that's going to blow some people away. Fang the Jester. Who's he? I'm Fang the Demented Clown. I wrote articles and reviews on mainstream and independent horror films for Emerald Gore Society. You could also follow Fang the Jester on Facebook. Last two, Johnny. Lullaby Night. What's that? That's the Alpha Witch. Who's that? That is on Twitter, Goth Girl Von Dark.
Wow.
Vegan, occultism, bizarre art, literature, cosmos, and horror, and she adores Kate Blanchett. You know what? I didn't drink before I read this shit.
It's okay, Bill. I adore Kate Blanchett.
Oh, you're an asshole.
I was going to say Clay Aiken or something like that, but anyway. But that, now I'm drinking. Okay, go ahead.
And finally, last but not least, the hyper, ultra hyper delicious, if there could be such a thing. And there is, because there is in this one woman. The phenomenal Jessica Calvello.
Yep.
She is the unicorn priestess. And the reason I can't even is because I'm odd. I also voice act and regular act, and I'm real good. And you could hashtag get random with Jessica, and she's all in your face on jessicacalvello.com, and she is amazing. If you love anime, you've heard her before. She's Hanj on Attack on Titan, and she is Cutie Honey and many, many more. Her talent is endless. So there we go, Johnny. Those are scream outs for this episode.
Awesome, Bill. Well, you can find me, in addition to the farm, you can find me. I wanted to talk about Sin City and how the farm plays a role in that, but I'll save that for another show.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb, and there are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my written material on CrashPalaceProductions.com because Billy is kind.
No, because you're a damn good writer, and that means I have less work to do, so thank you. I appreciate
Bill,
that.
Bill, I want to share the load and take some of the load off you. So, yeah. Tilling the fields, as it were.
Well, I'm not on the farm. I'm actually on the porch, and I'm standing up because I'm off my rocker, Johnny.
Whoa.
Well, how about that, huh?
Good. I like it.
Thanks. Good, because I just made that up right now. I'm going to do stand-up next week, probably at the new at Banner Cider establishment downriver brewery on Main Street in Stroudsburg. Look, I got that plug in. Holy crap.
Man.
I'm a whore. And I love it. I love it.
A whore for great cider and beer, apparently. Yeah.
Shit. Who wouldn't be? You could follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace, and also visit Crash Palace Productions for links to this show and wonderful articles by Johnny and many other people, including Dixie Fairy, who will be, she's an article that's coming up, which will probably be out before this show. So it's like,
oh, awesome.
Yeah. So it's like I'm doing some sort of like time travel shit right now. And
it's Tachyons, Bill.
Oh, jeez. Oh, I want to see Prince of Darkness right now. And if you're so inclined, if you're into kink noir and you know people who are, you could get my books for free on Kindle, on Amazon, under the name Prystauk, Prystauk, or you could buy the very low-priced paperback because my publisher is very nice. So I love her for that.
And both books are worth it at twice or triple the price, let me just say that.
Damn, man, that's... Dude, your review made me cry. Holy shit.
I call it like I see it, Bill. Both books are good. People, check them out. Buy the physical copies and Bill will find a way to sign it for you.
I'm a whore. I'll go anywhere. And I just finished the latest revision of the new book. And
awesome.
It's going to take some work, but it's there. It's where it needs to be. I have to come up with about 16,000 more words, which I could easily do to make it a solid novel for what it should be. And this is going to be different and interesting and maybe even more disturbing than the first two combined.
That's awesome, Bill. Like I say all the time, I'm really looking forward to it. So.
Oh boy, I hope I can deliver. I don't want it to be my Dark Knight Rises. I want it to... I want the Dark Knight to keep being the Dark Knight, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, don't make it the book equivalent of The Dark Knight, 3,000 pages with a bunch of subplots that go nowhere.
No, I'm not doing that shit.
Yeah, that's what The Dark Knight Rises felt like. Yeah,
that's the bane of my existence.
Oh, very funny, bro.
On that note...
Good night, bro.
Good night, Johnny. I hope all the puppies and kittens and other wonderful creatures go cross that rainbow bridge and go to the farm.
Oh yeah, me too.
Where they need to be, and I hope we all get to see them someday.
Me good too. Night. I don't care where I go. I just want my cat to be happy.
I hear that, man. I hear that. All right, man. Have a great night.
All right, night, Bill.
Night.